Welcome to another installment of the Geek Easy Podcast. I am Pixel Dan.
I'm Jonathan Leonard.
Are you ready to get worse-tastic?
I didn't know we were catchphrasing the opening.
But we are now.
Sure.
Let's get worse-tastic.
Yeah. I got worse-tastic 2 nights ago, and I don't want to do it again.
Well, we got to talk about it.
Okay, we
Everybody
talk about it.
Is anticipating this episode, John. Yeah. This is going to be like our biggest episode ever.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, maybe.
This
we have a strong chance of getting more listeners than the movie had viewers.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true, we do. This and when we finally sit down to talk about Batman versus Superman, they're going to be like all ears on us.
Yeah, but, yeah. Hopefully we'll have better results with that one.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Yes. So, here we go, guys. This is our episode where we're going to dedicate much of the time discussing Worst-tastic Four, yep. Or Fantastic Four, in case you don't get what we're doing here. But we've been actively calling this movie Worst-tastic Four for, yeah, what, a year?
Easily
a year.
Yeah. Ever since bad news started coming out of it, which is shortly after production began. So however long that's been.
Yep. Before we get into it, I want to read this real quick, because we do have some fan questions and some topic write-ins that we're going to get to in a little
mail
bit.
Or whatever you want to call it.
But I want to read this. This is again from our buddy Ryan Porter over at the Positively Nerdy podcast.
Hey, Ryan.
He says, "I wish I could be on this one. I really wanted you guys to be wrong, but you weren't. In fact, it was even more worse-tastic than you thought it would be. Just awful." So I had to throw that out there because that made me laugh.
Yeah.
Also, I want to remind you guys that we also were hoping that we were wrong. We've poked a lot of fun at this for sure. But if this movie turned out to be amazing, we'd have sat down right at this microphone and said, we were wrong. This movie was fun. But no, this movie, like Ryan said, was more worst-tastic than... I guess it could have been more worst-tastic, but it was pretty darn worst-tastic.
I don't know. By the time we actually give the review, I'm not sure if I'll be able to say I fully agree with the way that's worded, but we'll get into...
All right.
Should we just dive right
Let's
in?
Let's do it. Let's just jump in. So, spoiler warning right now. If by some crazy chance you want to watch this movie, turn off the podcast right now, because we're about to spoil the heck out of it for you guys.
Let's just say the studio and everybody else behind it already pretty much spoiled that movie.
Oh, for sure.
But we're going to tell you what happens in it.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
All right, so, Worst-tastic Four. Here's the deal. I really do, and just real quick review, I really honestly think that without a shadow of a doubt, this movie was nothing more than Fox scrambling to put something together to hold on to those rights. This movie feels like it was made to spite Marvel and its fans. Literally, that's the way this movie feels to me. Because it's just not a good movie. And it's not that it's a bad superhero movie, which it is, but it is a bad movie.
Yeah.
This is just, it is not shot well, it is not written well. The special effects are atrocious. I mean, this thing fails across the board as a film. It is just that bad.
Yep. And what I was kind of alluding to a moment ago, I can't say that it was worse than I thought it was going to be, because it's not. It's almost, man, I don't know how to put the proper words to this. It's not like the most atrocious movie you'll ever see. I wouldn't even say it's like Green Lantern bad. You know?
Really?
No, not at all. Okay. You never saw Green Lantern, did you?
I never did, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like hurtful bad. This movie is just so bland.
Yeah.
There's nothing. Like, there's no positives. And like you said, especially when it gets to the second half, every effect shot they do is cringe-inducing.
Uh-huh.
You know, it is bad. And then, like, the characterization, the very small part that they've started to sort of build up flies out the window.
Yeah.
Everything just kind of goes to nothing. The first half has some almost decent build. Like,
almost.
I watched the first half. I made notes while I was watching the movie. We might read some of those
later. We have to read these notes. These notes are amazing. We ended up seeing the movie separate, okay? Because Christina wanted to see it, so I went and watched it with her, and then John saw it a couple days later. So he took notes so that we could talk about it. His notes are the best.
Just to make sure I kept everything fresh in memory. You know?
We have to read
but
these
But I even
notes.
Noted in there halfway through, I'm like, despite itself, even though I've had some bad things to say about it so far, the first half wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
You know, wasn't good, but it wasn't that bad. And I got a strong feeling this is about to change. That's one of the notes. And lo and behold, it wasn't. 30 seconds didn't go by. I was like, here we go.
Yeah.
Straight downhill.
You know, and that's funny because that seems to be the general consensus, and it's exactly the same way I felt. The first half of the movie, you do kind of sit there and you're like, okay, this could have been worse. This isn't terrible. It's not great. It's not fun, but it's not bad. But it hits that point where it just dives.
Yeah.
And it dives
hard and fast.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what you're sitting there going, I thought this was going to be awful. And I'm not wrong, but I'm not sure that I'm right either at this point.
Yeah, like you sit there and you're like, okay, maybe worst case scenario, I'll just leave here going, well, that wasn't a great Fantastic Four movie. But this isn't, you know, like super offensive.
Yeah.
But no, it hits the offensive point.
Yep.
And it hits it hard.
Yep. So, well, the first half of the movie, I mean, let's go ahead and break that down, I guess. They start off with, and we'll speed through, we won't do our scene by scene like
we sometimes do.
We'll kind of speed through that. But they basically... They start off with a very young Reed Richards and Ben Grimm, and they go to school together, and they have some sort of, like, what I want to be when I grow up type thing, and Reed's talking about how he wants to be the first human to teleport living matter from one place to another, and trying to talk about how you can already do it with certain objects and whatever, and his teacher, who is Homer Simpson, if you didn't catch that, the actor who does the voice for Homer was that teacher. For whatever reason, just immediately craps all over his ideas and tells him he's got to go home and do it better. You know,
I like it. He's just like, that's not science.
Yeah, yeah. Huh? It's like, that's not real. Do something better.
Yeah.
I'm like, thanks, teach.
Yeah, you good. Know? You're a great teacher.
But he meets Ben Grimm while he's trying to steal some parts from Ben Grimm's junkyard. Grimm clearly doesn't like his family much, so it's kind of one of those things where, they're from different sides of the educational spectrum or whatever you want to say, but they quickly become buddies. And that dynamic there, I sort of liked, like, already. And, like, that felt like...
I mean, it's not far off from what you would see from Ben and Reed, right?
Exactly. Now, I mean, they're... In the comics, they're totally different backstories. But still, like, We've said that 100 times, like, with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and stuff. If you get the characters right, the specifics don't always matter.
Exactly.
You know, so right off, it's like, okay, positive start, sort of. Then they flash forward to where they're teenagers because they're at a science fair. And that same teacher is still wandering around the school in charge of things from 8 years ago or whatever. Yeah. And, Reed is still doing his same science experiment. The teacher still doesn't believe in it. So they get kicked out of the science fair and, Franklin Storm and his daughter Sue are wandering around just checking on science. They run into him, and they have apparently been working on the exact same project, except Reed in his garage has figured out a step that they were never able to master. So very hokey.
Yeah.
Again,
it's very movie cliche.
Exactly.
Kinda.
Cliche,
yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's all it is. I mean, it's like, well, what has every other movie ever done? Okay, let's just do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Pulls them in, and Reed has to leave Ben back in his junkyard, and he goes to the Baxter building?
Yeah.
I think it was.
Yeah.
And it's this big science thing, It's this big lab, essentially, where they're working on this stuff.
Which way to science?
Yeah, apparently I'm the Ben Grimm here.
Yeah.
You know. But, so they put him to work on trying to figure this thing out. Meanwhile, Franklin is always discussing things with the Army. Essentially, it's Tim Blake Nelson.
Yeah,
who played the leader in. He would have been the leader in the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah,
yeah. So another Marvel alumni, kind of doing
that's awesome.
More than one character there.
I mean, not awesome for him. Sorry, guy.
Yeah,
picked the wrong one here.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where you don't really understand fully what the relationship is because Franklin Richards clearly has some power here, but he's also clearly answering to this board of people we're not supposed to like for whatever reason that they never really tell us.
Yeah.
And so there's kind of some back and forth, and Franklin wants to bring in Victor Von Doom because he apparently had come up with the whole thing and then gotten kicked out somehow, whatever. So they end up going to get him. Now, I will say, too, as far as the overall movie goes, I think most of the cast was at least decent. The problem is, where do you draw the line? Because I didn't like a lot of these characters, but it wasn't necessarily because of the actor. Miles Teller, for instance, I will dog that Reed Richards as being way too boring, way too flat, but that's not Miles Teller's fault when his director is telling him, flatter, do less.
Right, which, you know? Which has actually come out in like some of these articles, like that Trank was specifically telling the cast to be flat and
do,
dull.
You know,
like
do
that.
Less, be dull, whatever.
That is so weird.
For the wrong type of movie.
Exactly.
You know? And we'll get into more of the specifics of that as we go. But my point being, most of the cast wasn't too bad. The guy playing Doom was pretty bad. You know, like his first scene on the movie, I'm already like, oh, this is painful to watch, you know?
Yeah.
So I didn't like him at all. But they end up bringing him back. So the team, and they go and find Johnny Storm, who is good at mechanics and building things. And he is...
He races cars.
Yeah, he is Franklin's biological son. Sue is his adopted daughter.
Yep.
And she is good at finding patterns, which I thought was a pretty cool thing that they started, like, they sort of, you know, they were kind of doing that, well, what's your thing?
Uh-huh.
And everybody, and hers was that she could recognize patterns. And I started thinking, well, that's a neat sort of spin on how that goes. That could be worked in pretty well. And then they just sort of left it alone.
They left it alone.
They go back to it at one point, but they never really develop it.
Yeah.
They just mention it again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So they go get Johnny, because he can build things. Sue can recognize pattern. Reed and Doom are the brains. And they all get together to work on this thing, and they kind of do... The montage was kind of fun.
Oh, yeah.
You know? That's what I'm saying. Like, there were some positive parts in the first half of the movie where you're like, all right, I'm not excited, but this is okay going through. And they actually do a little bit. This is the probably 2 minutes of the movie where they do any real character building and relationship building. They're showing these four all working together. Ben Grimm's not there, so Von Doom is the fourth, and they're all working on putting this machine together. And they actually seem to be getting along. They seem to be growing some relationships. I thought that was a pretty fun, like I said, probably 2 minutes worth of movie. And it's one of those scenes where right there, I'm already thinking, okay, this hasn't been as bad as I thought.
Yeah.
And now something kind of fun's happening. And then from there, it just sort of flattens right back out. They get the machine working. They send a test monkey over with a camera. He comes back alive. And
didn't kill the monkey. Yay.
No. You know, Tim Blake Nelson busts back in, is like, all right, that's great. We're really proud of everybody. We're really happy with it. Now we're going to get the army down here and we're going to send some guys
NASA.
Over.
He wanted to get NASA involved.
Yeah, NASA.
He's like, oh, we got to get NASA involved now.
NASA.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, well, we wanted to go over it. He's like, all right, well, that's great, kids, but you can't.
Yeah,
you know?
Sorry, kids. Thanks for building this.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to get NASA now, though.
And immediately, that's when, like, a little bit of conflict pops up. They all kind of sit around going, well, this is supposed to be us. We should be the ones over there. They had a kind of a cool idea behind, you know, one of them. I can't even remember who said it, but one of them was like, you know, you guys know who built the first space shuttle? And they're all like, no.
Oh, Doom said that.
Was it Doom?
Yeah, Doom was like, yeah. He goes, but everybody knows who Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin are, right?
Exactly. Like, they get all the...
It's like, one day we're going to be the ones sitting in a bar saying, I'm the one that built that.
Yep.
I'm the one that built the space shuttle, and nobody's going to care.
Yep. Which I thought was a pretty kind of neat take on it,
So
they decide they're going to just jump in the thing itself and go. Now... At the time, they're all sitting around drinking, but it's just Reed and Victor and Johnny.
Yep.
Sue is nowhere to be found in this scene.
Yeah.
And when they decide they're going to go, now, they built this thing with four pods on it, too. For whatever science reason, I guess.
Four people.
Yeah, you think, okay, well, they can go ahead and get Sue and sneak her over also, but nope, Reed's not going to go unless he calls Ben. Ben's got to come with him.
Yeah.
So he calls Ben at 3 in the morning. Which they had alluded at one point to it being like a 40-minute train ride or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So apparently they just waited for an hour, and apparently trains run all night, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because
right?
he just shows up, and it's still the middle of the night, and basically his friend's like, hey, we're going to pop into another dimension, and you're coming with us in this fairly untested machine. And he's like, okay, cool.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Yeah, so they get
Let's
in.
Let's do it.
They go. Their plan is to go and set a flag so they can prove they were there, take a little bit of footage, whatever. They end up getting there. They decide to kind of wander around a little bit. They see this energy coming out of the negative zone. Now, the negative zone already looked really hokey.
Well, really, yeah.
Like, cartoony may not be the right word for this. It's certainly the right word for a lot of the stuff that comes later. But it just looked terrible. I don't know how else to say it. Like, just poorly animated background green screen stuff. It just didn't look good. But it's got this energy kind of flowing through it. And so they go to investigate. This accident happens. The energy starts kind of shooting out of the ground. They go to try to climb this cliff back up. Dooms ends up falling in, so they lose him. They go to get back into the machine, and they can't get it to work, but but their radio starts working again. So they get a hold of Sue, and they tell her to bring him back, and so she's working on her end trying to get it. They finally get it through, but before it gets through, like Ben's door latch breaks for some reason, and they're kind of caught in this like energy storm, so all these rocks are flying around, and rocks start flying into his tube while he's in there, and something breaks through Johnny's face plate, like the glass in front of it, and it bursts into flame, so he's on fire.
Yeah.
And I can't even explain what happened to Reed.
I don't even know.
Nothing happened to his tube, I don't think. He just came back through and could stretch for some reason.
Yeah, yeah.
And they ended up, when they come back through the portal, Sue is in the room, so she gets blasted by some of the energy, and Doom is gone, and the whole thing explodes, wipes power out for everywhere, and that was pretty much, that's the point where I wrote that note, where I went, okay, it hasn't been too bad so far. I'm really getting nervous about what's coming next, though. And, man, boy, was I right.
Boy, did you call that right. Yeah, so, all right, we got to address some of this stuff, too, because some of this is just silly.
It's like we can break the movie into two halves.
Yeah, let's that's a good point.
That's the summary
right
of the
there.
First half?
Summary of the first half. Now let's discuss some of this stuff. Yeah. We did kind of talk about some of the things in there that wasn't too bad. I liked some of it, and I agree with a lot of your points, too, with, like, some of the early characterization wasn't too bad, and, you know, I'm not a huge fan of the smaller Ben Grimm, but I don't, you know, like, that's one of those things that I could have easily looked past if this were a better done movie.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, okay, maybe smaller guy before, but afterwards turns into a big rock guy, that's not, you know, whatever, that's okay, I can accept that.
And he had the tough guy attitude.
And he was still the tough guy, and he was kind of like, you know, Reed's bodyguard, basically.
Yeah.
You know, he was the strong type looking out for the nerd that he had a soft spot for. And that's, they didn't get real deep into that, but they at least kind of let you know that that was the connection between them. And that was fine. That's all I really needed with those guys. We were kind of joking earlier when we were going over your notes, which we got to do some more, about a lot of the stuff that they kind of start beating you over the head with early on to kind of poke those comic book jokes at you. Like the teacher at one point makes reference to Reed building a flying car.
Yeah.
You know, the Fantastic Car, which is a thing.
His response, I'm not working on that anymore.
I'm not working on that anymore. You know, while they're doing the building stuff and going through the montage and everything, Sue calls Doom a Dr. Doom. Oh, we got a Dr. Doom over here.
Wah, he was wah, saying wah, something wah. Negative.
Yeah.
Because he was very anti-establishment, and they set that up, like, from the get-go. I don't want to come work for them because, you know, he seemed to respect and like Franklin Storm, but he's like, I don't want to come work for you because you work for these other people, and I don't like them and whatever else. And so he was saying something negative about how, well, they're just going to do this and that when we're finished with it anyway. And she's like, well, I guess we got a regular Dr. Doom over here.
And I'm sitting
in the theater going, I don't want to see anymore.
I know, right? Yeah. And, you know, and I wouldn't even really mind that stuff too much if, like, this movie wasn't trying to be opposite of the comic book.
Again.
And so they were like, they were adding these little jokes in there, like, it was like their way of getting to the comic book fans. Like, this one's for the comic book fans. Throw that joke in there for us. No, we're past that now.
Yep.
We don't need, you know, those little jokes. Like, when the first X-Men movie came out and Wolverine made that comment about wearing the black leather and Cyclops said, what would you prefer, yellow spandex? Okay, that was funny at the time because, you know, it was the first kind of real superhero movie we were getting. But look, Marvel Studios is running around now putting actual comic pages in the theater.
Yeah.
Don't make these jokes anymore because it doesn't work anymore.
Now
it feels like you're making fun of us or insulting our intelligence here.
Or my point would be, if you're going to go so far out of your way to make a Fantastic Four movie that doesn't fit the mold, don't turn around and slap us with the mold.
Yeah,
you know,
there you
like
go.
you're going out of your way to make a movie that's totally different from all that stuff, so don't throw all the in-jokes in to reassociate yourself with it. If you're going to break from it, break from it.
Yeah.
You know? And you made a point earlier, too. It's possible some of that stuff may have been what's, you know, some of the stuff that was thrown in post, after everything went down to nothing and Fox took over.
And rewrote a bunch of stuff. Like, they might have added some of that in make it feel more comic booky, maybe.
Yeah, which wouldn't, it's not really an excuse. That doesn't make it okay. It just makes more sense.
I could totally see that, because that almost feels like something that, from everything we've read, that doesn't almost seem like something Josh Trank would want in this movie. Yeah. That almost does seem like something where Fox was trying to intervene and say, we got to add some more of this kind of stuff. Yeah, because
I can't wait till we can talk about all the stuff that's come out since that movie.
Oh, man, we're getting there. But even like Johnny's abusive older brother said, it's clobbering time during that scene. And Ben's older brother, sorry. And I got a little upset at that point because I was like, man, I don't like that this catchphrase is associated with his brother being a bully and beating him up. Yeah. Like, that's, I don't want that, you know, like the F phrase has a very negative connotation now. And I don't want that with the, that needs to be something fun that thing yells out when he's thing. I don't know. So they threw all that stuff in there, like real early in the movie, like that first half had those three right there, but boom, boom, boom. They're already making those little in jokes. But also, like, when we get to the scene where they actually go to the negative zone, what's up with Sue not getting to go?
Yeah, like they didn't even think about her.
They're just
I mean, she was with them the whole time.
Yeah.
All that montage stuff they did where they were building, I mean, this was all, and they did a thing where they kept alluding to, obviously, Reed had a bit of a crush on her.
Yeah.
And they pretty much flat out say, like, Victor had a crush on her. I mean, attentive to where she is.
They did the Doom-Reed-Sue triangle.
Yeah. Which, cool.
Which is fine.
But even more reason why, when these guys go, okay, this thing we all four of us have been working on, why don't we do this except not call that girl we like?
Yeah.
You know?
Here's one of the things that the movies, I feel like all the Fantastic Four movies have gotten wrong. They always feel the need to connect Doctor Doom's origin directly to the Fantastic Four's origin and also superpower him up. We don't need that. That's not how it needs to be.
I know there was a time where I was very knowledgeable about Doctor Doom's origin. Or whatever they said it was at the time. That time was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I know him and Reed were friends.
Uh-huh. I mean, they were like...
Did the comic origin have anything to do with... I know it didn't have anything to do with the space mission, but did it have anything to do with Reed at all or anything like that?
I don't... You know, and I'll be honest and say the same thing. Like, I'm not overly knowledgeable about all that stuff, but I know for certain that Doom doesn't go with them and get powers.
Yeah, exactly.
But that has happened in even the last Fox Fantastic Four movie. They did that with him. Mm-hmm. And that's just
not to this degree.
Yeah. We'll not to this degree, too. But that's just one of those things where I'm like, I feel like you guys are getting the Doom character wrong from the get go because he doesn't need that.
Exactly.
And, I remember, we were leaving the movie and Christine and I were talking about all the things we disliked about the movie together, which was fun. Because she also didn't like it. And I was kind of telling her about the Doom thing. I was just like, I just really wish I could see a proper Dr. Doom in movies. Mm-hmm. Because Dr. Doom is a really cool Marvel villain.
Oh, for sure.
And he's like one of the biggest Marvel villains. And one of the things that's so cool about him is he doesn't have superpowers, but he doesn't need superpowers. He's like this evil, maniacal dictator type of guy who gets things done. Mm-hmm. And she was saying... Yeah, but I guess because it's a movie, so you have to give him superpowers. And I was like, why? Why is it that you have to give him superpowers because he's a movie? Yeah. That's ridiculous. And she goes, well, name a movie where a supervillain didn't have powers. And I was like, Red Skull and Captain America.
Yeah.
He didn't have powers, you know? And she was just like, oh, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
And you don't have to give these guys superpowers to make them a threat. Yeah. And sometimes Lex Luthor, there you go. Yeah. But these studios, for some reason, just feel like they have to. Like, they're like, oh, audiences won't understand unless he's got superpowers also.
It is old Hollywood thinking.
It is old Hollywood thinking.
And Fox is still stuck in it.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's what, I mean, they're breaking that mold, slowly but surely. And again, we'll tout Marvel. It's what we do around here. They're the ones who went, because that was just that,
like, sponsored by the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Like that joke you referenced in the first X-Men movie, though. They're like, oh, what do you want to do, yellow spandex or whatever? And I remember specifically when that movie came out, because that was one of the things the internet was talking about. Like, well, the suits are black leather. And the
early
explanation
internet
was that, we did some color testing. Some of this stuff just doesn't work on film. Yellow really doesn't work on film that well. The spandex looked ridiculous. This looks a little bit more cinematic, a little bit more real world. And at the time, you're like, okay, I can buy that. That all makes sort of sense. and the movie was still good, ultimately, so whatever, no big deal. But like you said, we've got movies now. We've got comic book movies that are pulled from the page and put on the screen.
Yeah, we're just beyond
that.
So,
yeah,
right
you
now.
Can't buy anymore, well, spandex suits don't work, and certain colors don't work. We've got all the technology in the world to make any of that stuff happen. We've got screens that show everything in high def and bright colors. They really come out and pop at you. Any of that stuff works perfectly, and it looks beautiful on screen when you put the time and the effort into it. So I'm not going to buy anymore. Well, it's got to be this way because movie audiences are only going to accept a certain thing. Nope. We're accepting anything that's thrown at it if it's good.
Yeah, if it's good. Yeah. That's the key. That's the key. Talking about suits, that's definitely something I want to talk about in the second half of the movie here, is their suits that they get.
Are we ready to go to the...
Let's do it. Okay. Jump right into half two here.
Now all heck breaks loose, and the movie flushes itself down the toilet.
The end.
They get back. They get back. There's been this horrible disaster. Johnny is laying there on fire. Ben is basically just a pile of rocks. He's not even really formed. I think he's like screaming, and Reed's trying to help him.
He's under the rocks.
Yeah,
you know,
and Reed's like trying to crawl over to him, and then he looks back and realizes that he's been crawling, except his legs are caught under something too.
Yeah, so he's
really been stretching.
Yeah,
you know, and so the whole project is destroyed. I think power's wiped out in the whole city or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Sue's completely invisible
at
this point.
Yeah,
she totally phased out.
Yep, she phased out when she got hit. And they kind of do this sort of like fade out aftermath thing, and they come back up, and they're all sort of in prison cells may not be exactly the right word, but they're in solitary. They're all isolated, and they are in these cells, essentially.
It almost looks like they're being like tested on too.
Yeah.
Because like they've got Reed like all stretched out, you know, like he's like in this crazy bed where they've got his arms and his legs all stretched and
now I will say too, like at least I didn't get the feeling, and a lot of movies do that thing where immediately, you know, whatever government force is in charge is immediately being evil. I never really got the sense that the army, like, even Tim Blake Nelson, like, they weren't really evil. They may not have had the same goals that the characters you like did, or the good guys did, or whatever. But even now, they're not like, oh, we've got to take these guys and torture them and find out, we'll cut them open and find out what makes them work, and they're going to work for us even if they don't want to, blah, 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 whatever. They were like, all right, we can weaponize these guys.
Yeah, they did want to weaponize
them.
Right,
but they weren't like forcing them into things they didn't want to do, and they weren't torturing them or anything like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they were just like, hey, we're going to try to help you out, but you're going to help us out too. And everybody was sort of on board. But they do this thing where Reed wakes up and he's stretched out and he doesn't know what's going on. And he kind of forces himself to pull himself together. And he ends up like breaking out of his room and he's crawling through the vents and he finds Ben. And Ben is stuck as this giant rock and they have a little conversation. Ben is clearly very upset with Reed about what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
The alarm starts sounding because they realize one of them's gotten away. And Reed's like, all right, I'm going to come back for you. And ends up escaping out of the vents and running away. And then they, you know, I think they do a little bit still where Franklin Richards comes, or I keep calling him Richards, because there is a Franklin Richards in the comic.
That's their son.
Yeah.
That's their kid.
Franklin Storm comes in and, you know, goes to see his son, and his son is on fire.
Yeah.
You know, and seems to be miserable, you know, and then goes to see his daughter, and she's just phasing, she's unconscious, but she's phasing in and out of, like, the visible field, and there's just this downtrodden, terrible feeling, and I will tell you, and I've brought this episode up before. It's a Venture Brothers episode.
Uh-huh.
When we were talking about the rumors of some of this stuff happening, and this is exactly it. And I hate myself. I meant to look up exactly what episode that was so I could mention it on here. Like, go find this episode. If you've seen the movie, go find this Venture Brothers episode. And if we were getting paid for this, I'd have been fired by now. Because I do this every two episodes. Yeah. Oh, I meant to look something up to tell you guys about, but I didn't.
But I forgot.
But right. I will figure it out and post it on Facebook or something. But there's a Venture Brothers episode where they meet essentially their version of the Fantastic Four. And everything seems, you know, hunky-dory and normal. And it's, you know, a family with the same powers and everything. And then you find out halfway through the episode that these are actually terrible disabilities that these characters have. You know, like, you find out that the Human Torch is just hurting all the time because he's on fire. And, you know, the guy who's a rock monster is miserable about it. And I don't even remember why the Invisible Woman and the Stretchy Guy were so miserable. But basically, that's the whole point of the episode, is in actuality, this is a terrible trap that these guys are all in. And that's exactly what's playing out on the scene in this movie. And I always get the feeling that that's one of those things where they go, ooh, this is a really original idea. Except it's not. It's not even your idea.
Ah.
You were sleepy one night 10 years ago, and you saw a Venture Brothers episode, and you forgot about it, and you thought you invented it.
Yeah.
You know? Sleepy or whatever.
So, with that whole scene, and I was kind of thinking about that, too, and even while I was watching it, I was like, you know, this isn't a terrible idea, necessarily, even if it has been joked about before. Like, the thought of them coming back and kind of being horrified by what has happened to them is plausible, you know.
For sure.
Like, but I guess I didn't really like the aspect of the fact that they dwelled on it for so long to the point that it was uncomfortable to watch. And it made you kind of, like, sad and depressed feeling and just, you know, like it, that point of the movie was so down. I don't know. Like, I didn't really like how Johnny was portrayed as being in pain from the fire, basically. Like, it was like he was burning. And I was like, no, I don't like that. Yeah. He shouldn't be burning, should he?
Not for so long. You know? Like I say, when they first came back, that sort of made sense, you know? But this, like, this little stretch of scene here is, I mean, it's got to be at least, you know, a day or a couple of days later or whatever, because these guys have all been unconscious for a while. That it shouldn't last that long. And like you said, it makes you uncomfortable. Which, on the one hand, if this is the idea you're going for, then you sort of pulled it off well because you're hitting there.
Yeah.
On the other hand, this is not a good idea for a Fantastic Four movie. I can't imagine anyone who's a fan of the property or anybody who's just a general moviegoer wants from this universe.
And I think that's just the thing. Like, I didn't think it was necessarily too, I mean, I didn't like the way it played out, but the thought behind it was a decent thought, a decent idea. That's just not what I wanted out of this. Like, even if they did it a little bit, I'd have been a little bit better with it. But the fact that they just really dwelled on it, and then that really kind of became the focus of the whole second half of the movie, was just not what I was looking for in a Fantastic Four movie. And, you know, it's not even too bad for somebody like Ben to be, like, ultra-depressed about it, because he was always kind of the one who got the
wanted,
real...
To go back.
He really got the shaft on this deal, because at least the other three people can look normal.
Yeah.
When they want to look normal, he is stuck as a giant rock monster forever. So he has always kind of battled with the depression a little bit and wanting to be human again and all that. So that's fine. But the fact that they just made, I mean, the whole second half of this movie was depression.
Yep.
Because that became the focus of the whole movie. And this is where it really plays into all those rumors we heard about this movie not being about a superhero team, but being about a group of four scientists with disabilities.
Yeah.
And you could see that was kind of the basis here.
Yep. And again, I can't even say it was necessarily done ineffectively. I didn't like it.
I didn't like it. Yeah, exactly.
Now, I can also not say it was done really well and I just didn't like it. It's another one of those movies. The best things I can say about the parts of this movie is some of those parts weren't too bad. And this is one of those, the first half, there were some bright flashing points where I was like, okay, they're doing fine. The second half starts here and immediately I just stop feeling attached to the movie.
Yeah.
Because they just sort of push me out of the realm of caring by making me so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, with what I'm seeing, that I'm just like, all right, I'm already sucked out of this. Because I was excited because, hey, cool, now I'm going to see some stuff with powers. Except everyone's so sad and miserable and in pain. And it just makes you feel creepy.
It was. Yeah, it was creepy. Yeah. Creepy is another good word for it, because that's kind of how I felt, too. Yeah.
Now, then they flash forward a year.
They do, 1 year later, they do that whole thing.
And immediately they come back in, you know, the army has built them suits that can contain their powers.
Uh-huh.
And they are being trained to use them. Mm-hmm. Reed is nowhere in sight.
Yeah.
Because he left and never came back, which made Ben even more upset. Like, Grimm hates Reed now.
Yeah.
Because
he feels abandoned by Reed. Yeah.
He was forced into this thing, but he was taken to this world that ended up giving him this terrible disability or whatever, and then his friend who did it, who promised him he would help him, just runs away and never comes back instead, you know?
Yeah.
And so Tim Blake Nelson keeps telling them, we're going to help you out, but you got to help us out. So they're showing this footage of basically the Army using Ben Grimm, the thing, on these field missions.
Yeah.
And how effective he is. They're training Johnny to do the same, because Johnny's got a suit now where he can control himself. And that was the other thing. They went right from, oh, he's on fire and it's terrible and he's so miserable and he's in pain all the time, to 1 year later, totally cool with everything.
Oh, yeah.
And turn it on and off, and he likes the power.
I was going to say, and he was very excited to help the military.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go kill some people with my fire powers. Let's do it. Yeah, so this was their explanation, and we did kind of give a lot of grief to the suits prior to this movie, because they went the black spandex, yep, or the black tight leather look route that Fox does, you, yep, know, and I didn't like that because I wanted to see blue Fantastic Four costumes. But I guess in the context here, they weren't really a superhero team. The suits were built for them by the military to help contain their powers.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess I get that explanation. I'm not sure how I felt about their suits actually being able to turn the powers on and off. Like, every time Johnny wanted to flame on, he, like, turned a switch and his fire came on.
Oh, really? I didn't even notice
that. You didn't notice that? He had, like, a little, like, a knob. He was like, click, click, shkoom! And when he turned it off, he turned that knob and his fire powers went away.
Oh, I never even noticed that.
And, you know, like, so their suits were actually, like, that's how they were controlling their abilities, yeah, was with these suits that they were made. And even when we catch up with Reed here, which we're getting to, but it looks like he built his own.
He's made his own.
He built his own.
Out of slinkies.
To keep himself from just randomly falling down.
Somehow having springs all over himself made him
less stretchy. Yeah. So, like, I guess the story that they're telling us here is that he has no control over that stretch. If he is not wearing this little makeshift suit that he made, he would just be a pile of goo or whatever.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's crazy.
Which, again, he just put some slinkies on the arm and apparently somehow that
it fixed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did think the dynamic was interesting because Ben, they basically went to Ben, hey, we're still trying to figure out a way back. We're working on this machine. Once we get back, we'll try to fix you, but you need to keep helping us till then. Which he didn't seem terribly upset by, but he wasn't terribly happy with either. He just wanted to go back to normal. They go to Johnny, and they're like, hey, Johnny, we're going to train you and test you, and then we're going to put you out in the field. And Johnny's like, gung-ho, let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, they go to Sue, and Sue's the one who's, like, she's training for whatever reason and trying to learn how to use these powers, except the only thing she cares about is getting back to her normal life, which I thought was weird, too, because she, of all the four of them, is absolutely the least...
Hurt by it.
Like, she could just not turn invisible and go back to her normal life.
But only when she's wearing that suit.
Well, yeah, but even so,
she's got to leave
that suit
on all
the
time.
The only different part about her life is that she's got a different fashion sense now.
Yeah.
If she really wants. You know?
Yeah.
But she was very adamant about, we don't want to do this. You know, we just want to figure out how to get back. Franklin Storm.
Yes. There you go. You got it.
Was adamant about trying to get them back so he could get his kids back to normal. And then he kind of got into a spat with Johnny because Johnny was like, I don't want to go back to normal. I like this. This is cool.
Yeah.
So I'll help them, whatever. You know, we'll do it. They end up somehow... Oh, they locate Reed because this is the second time when they go back to Sue being able to find patterns. They go to her and are basically like, look, we need you to help on this search, even though you're mad at this guy and you know, you don't want to see him again or whatever, but you're the one, you know, we've got tidbits here and there, snippets that nobody can put together, and you're the one who can see patterns, so we think you can find them.
Brought the patterns thing back.
Yep. So she does, of course, find him pretty quickly. They send a team of army guys that he starts beating up, and then they send the thing, who catches him. They have a few angry words and knocks him out and brings him back. And they basically tell him when they get him back. It's another one of those immediately goes right through, like, you know, you built us a machine and then stole it from us and then blew up the city and did all this terrible stuff to your friends and then ran away. But we just want you to help us build it back up. You know, like they just kind of glossed over a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
And we're like, all right, all we're looking for you for is because we need you to help fix it. And he does the thing where he sits down at the computer and is like, we just got some stuff out of order here. It'll be up and running in 10 minutes. And they're like, it can't be that easy. We've been working on this for a year, you know? And he's like, I'll get it.
Done.
And then, which I thought was one of the things, I thought that was kind of a funny gag. And I'll buy that out of Reed Richards. That was cool. But what I thought was even funnier was they get this thing built, or they've had it built. He comes in and reprograms a few things, like, okay, it's ready to go now. And they don't test it again. They don't wait. They don't do nothing. They're like, all right, we'll get some soldiers. Send them out.
Let's send them. Yeah. We're ready. Let's do this. Yeah.
You know, so they send some people back to the negative zone.
Oh, man.
Or whatever that place is called. The other Earth. Because that's kind of the whole crux, is they found a second Earth. And it's a primordial Earth. So maybe it'll help explain how our evolution came about, blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah.
So they send some guys back. As soon as they get back, they start looking around. They see a figure waltzing towards them who... like Dan said earlier, happens to just have found some shoddy old cloak.
Hey, guys.
In the negative
zone. I've been here for a year. You guys like my new cloak?
Yeah.
I found this while I was just hanging out here in the negative zone. I found it at the cloak store.
Yep.
It's around the mountain by the power energy streams. This is a store of cloaks. I got one.
So this figure comes walking up, decrepit, stumbling, whatever. They catch him. They're all sitting there going, oh, it can't be. And they figure out it's probably Victor, you know. Now... He shows up, and they pull the cloak off of him, and they get a good look at him, and he's all, somehow he's been forged with metal and something, and he looks like, I don't know, like...
I don't even know what he looks like.
Yeah, I can't even tell you.
He looks like a mess.
He's supposed to look like Dr. Doom. He looks terrible.
Looks dumb.
Yeah.
So dumb.
Yeah, like beyond bad. Awful.
These are some of those terrible effects we were talking about earlier. It's bad.
Yeah, you remember when I said Green Lantern was worse than this movie?
Uh-huh.
Dr. Doom looked worse than the Green Lantern suits.
Oh, okay.
Which looked terrible also, you know. it's just bad. And they grab him and they bring him back to Earth and everybody's, you know, like, oh, it can't be, blah, 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 whatever. Well, he immediately, like, gets up and I guess it was all a ruse for some reason. He is fine. He's able to walk. He just starts murdering people. It really, it did go that fast, didn't it?
It did like go they that went, fast.
They got him, they found him, they brought him back, and then he just starts wrecking people.
This whole end thing, okay, all of the movie was the depressing stuff. And then this part where the part where they get Dr. Doom to the end of the movie happens in what feels like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's all nothingness. It's just nothing.
Yep. Just
nothing.
Mayhem.
Mayhem, and nothing is accomplished at the end of the day. Nope. It's just, what the crap was that? Like,
well,
that's what it feels like.
That's basically, like, he starts, like, he looks over, he gives some speech. I don't remember who he was talking to. It was Tim Blake Nelson.
Oh.
Comes in to talk to him, to try to interview him, and he immediately murders him.
Yeah.
Just by looking at him. Looks at him, and his head explodes.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
While giving him a speech, a Dr. Doom speech, which was also terrible. Then he turns around. Well, actually, I think he killed a room full of people first.
Yep.
Like everybody in the control room, he just brought the ceiling down on him.
Yep.
And then he turns around and looks at Tim Blake Nelson, gives him the speech, and then blows his head up. Then he starts walking through the hallways, and soldiers keep coming up to try to stop him. And he's, you know, tossing them around by looking at them, blowing their heads up by looking at
them. What are Doom's powers?
Exactly.
They make nonsense. Exactly. Like, there is no, like... He just does things, anything, all the things.
Yeah.
That's his powers. Yeah. I do all the things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what, when I first saw it, that's another thing that was in my notes.
Yeah.
When he first did that thing where he just sort of pulled the ceiling down on that room full of people, I'm like, oh, so he's Magneto, I guess?
Yeah.
And then he just started making people's heads explode. I'm like, okay, so he's not Magneto. So apparently his power is he can just look at things and make something unpredictably terrible happen to whatever he's looking at.
He does all the things.
Yeah. You know, it's like, I look at you, and you get Final Destination. You know?
Final Destination.
Yeah. And so he's wandering through, and he's doing this. He runs up to... Franklin Storm catches up to him. They have a little bit of a talk back and forth, and it's kind of one of those, he's too far gone. He's got to destroy the world, because otherwise mankind will destroy it and his world, because apparently the negative zone is his world now.
Yep,
I felt like they turned that alternate dimension into his Latveria.
Yep.
You know, even though there was no one
there. There's nobody there. Yeah.
And
they did mention him coming from Latveria
early in the movie, which again, I'm positive was done post.
Yeah.
That's one of those rewrite things that they had to do because they just threw the reference in there. But like I said, apparently he's decided that the only way he can save his barren, desolate wasteland of a planet in this other dimension is to destroy this planet. So somehow he goes back through the machine... the portal thing.
Uh-huh.
And then as soon as he gets back through the portal thing... Oh, he kills Franklin. They catch up to each other. He's too far gone. And Franklin's trying to stop him, so he just murders him right in front of Sue and Johnny.
Yeah.
goes back into the machine, teleports out. They're all like, oh, no, he's gone. What do we do? How do we get him back? Bring the machine back, whatever. Meanwhile, he gets back to that other dimension and somehow basically just, like, lifts rocks out of the ground.
Uh-huh.
They build this weird structure that just builds, like, a black hole portal. And somehow, with his mind or his vision
he's like
or
Dr. Manhattan,
whatever powers.
Dude.
Yeah. That, wow.
He
totally.
Just Dr. Manhattan to
totally.
That place.
Totally. That's
yeah.
the closest thing you can say.
Yeah.
He can just look at things and anything happens.
Yeah.
And so he builds he just imagines this portal, this black hole portal that connects his dimension with Earth again. All of Earth is starting to get sucked through.
Yeah.
So the four decide that they've got to go through to stop him.
Yeah.
So they all get together. Sue puts the force field around the Thing and Mr. Fantastic. Johnny Storm is just flies around on fire.
Because that's the same.
Yeah, exactly.
He's shielded
by
fire.
Yeah, they go through the portal. They all come at him one at a time. He hands each one of them their butt individually.
Yes,
you
yes.
know, just wrecking the team. I don't even remember what happened to where somehow they, like, because they were all done. Like, Reed's suit got broken, so he was just a puddle. The
yeah.
thing was covered by rocks. Johnny and Sue, I think, were just knocked out, whatever. And Reed somehow wills himself back into form.
Yeah.
Knocks Dr. Doom down or breaks his concentration, whatever, and it allows the other guys to get free. And they all kind of come together, and they do that cornball, super cheesy line where one of them's like, you know, what are we going to do? He's stronger than all of, or, you know, he's stronger than any of us. And Reed's like, but he's not stronger than all of us. And as my soul is dying from hearing this dialogue, the four come together and beat up Dr. Doom for a while, knock him into his own portal so he evaporates.
He's dead.
They fly through the portal before it closes, so they all get back to Earth. And then the portal closes, and everyone's safe and fine.
And literally all this happens within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I swear.
It felt like, I mean, the
I
scene
swear.
Might have stretched out for 10,
yes.
but it felt like
from the time that Dr. Doom
shows up
in his sweet new cloak to the time that Dr. Doom dies felt like 5 minutes
yeah.
of that whole movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just, and it was so fast and crazy with terrible special
yep.
effects
oh,
and awful
so
dialogue.
It just looks so
and you
bad.
Don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And it was just, there was really, like, this was the part where they, this is the part of the movie where you're supposed to, with the story that they're telling, we were supposed to see them all come together and finally be a team. And you were supposed to be happy
yeah.
and excited and cheer them on. Except that's not really what happened here
nope.
at all. They kind of said that line to be a team. But no, this
yeah.
was not a team effort. This was not them being
yeah.
superheroes.
Yeah. Like, they all did stuff, and then it was over.
And I even get, like, what they were going for with the whole, oh no, Reed's suit's broken, now he's a pile of goo, except, look, he's stretching without the suit now! Except that was just awful, because, you know, they never really focused any time or effort anywhere through this movie of him trying to learn to control his powers and maybe it's possible to move, you know, control these
yeah.
powers without this suit. That was never even a thought that was presented to you. There was the one throwaway line where they were like, we made these suits so you can control your powers. And then you notice that Reed made his own suit and nothing else was ever brought up. So when he's a pile of goo and then all of a sudden goes, wait a minute, and then just fixes himself and starts fighting and stretching, it's like, oh, come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
too
that,
much, too fast.
That's, yeah, like you can't just do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, oh, man.
Yeah.
No, it was so bad, the
oh,
whole
bad.
Thing.
And this is where you kind of, a lot of those initial reviews that started hitting like Wednesday of the week that it came out,
mm-hmm.
several of them sort of said the same thing. Like this whole movie felt like it was like set up for the rest of the movie that just sort of never happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's exactly, this is where that point really drives home. Because that's one of those things you hear, you read that and you go, that sounds awful. But you don't really comprehend what that means until you're sitting there
until
watching going,
it.
Yep, I just, that's what
that's
I felt.
That's exactly
that's
what
feeling
it was.
I have right here.
Yeah. It,
because
and
it just, it you know, you feel like at the, you know, the first half, you feel like they're building a little bit of something going on. Not necessarily towards something, but they're at least building the characters. The second half just sort of happens for a half an hour,
mm-hmm.
and then there's this 3-minute final battle scene, and then it's just over. And you're like, wait, like, I feel like, I mean, shouldn't we have gone somewhere? Because we didn't go anywhere. It just happened and was done.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And, you know, and that's another one of those things, too, where people might say, or they might say, well, now at least it's set up so we can get a sequel. No.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about this before, too. These movies should never be made in hopes that, oh, the sequel will now be good because we set it all up with this first movie. Not like this.
Make a good movie.
You still have to make
another good movie.
Exactly. You still have to make a good movie that is a story in itself that is still exciting and fun to watch. You can't do 2 hours of depressing, slow-moving, you know, just awful, boring material because that's your setup for a sequel that might be the superhero movie we want. Yeah. No.
And it's absolutely unnecessary.
Absolutely
Especially with movies where you've had previous iterations of how this stuff came to be. If that's what you wanted to do, do what Incredible Hulk did, where they were like, hey, there was another Hulk movie, kinda. Here's some flashes.
Yes.
Of some, you know, like not scene for scene because it was, you know, they reshot themselves, but basically they just opened that movie with this weird sort of flashback.
The opening credits told us the story of how Hulk became
exactly.
Hulk.
It's their version of some of the stuff that sort of happened in the other movie, but not exactly. But they trust audiences to connect that even though this is a different movie, it's the same character. So we already sort of know what happened. We don't need any of that garbage a second time, 3 years later, 5 years later, whatever it was. We can just go ahead. Well, you can pan those early Fantastic Four movies as much as you want, but they existed and people saw them. So if you really wanted to do the, well, we need the setup so we can make a good movie, you've got the setup.
Yeah.
Just do a very elusive flashback to that kind of stuff in the same vein.
It's always been my complaint about the Spider-Man movies.
Oh, the Amazings? Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought they were good movies, but totally unnecessary.
That first one was totally unnecessary because they spent
The first one
they spent most of that whole movie origining again, and I didn't need that.
And I really liked that movie. I thought they did it very well, but that doesn't mean it wasn't unnecessary.
Yeah.
Totally unnecessary.
Totally unnecessary. Yeah. So the very end of this movie is where they decided that they were going to try to. This is where they're all of a sudden like, all right, let's give them a little bit of fun stuff now, right? Right? Yeah. Now it's fun now, right?
Because they're having this meeting with the army or whoever. I keep calling them the army. I don't know whatever government agency it is.
Might as well be the military of some sort. Yeah.
They're like, well, we want you to do this, this, and this, and if you do it, we'll give you that. And the Fantastic Four are basically like, well, you're just going to give us what we want, and that's it. And they're like, okay, we'll do that then.
Okay.
So they just give him this giant, fully staffed facility in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And
which isn't the Baxter Building. Yeah. We don't go back to the Baxter Building.
Or Four Freedoms Plaza. It's none of that stuff. It's in the woods, it looks like.
Yeah.
You know? Ben's happy now, it seems.
This scene here, because now all of a sudden they're standing there and they're looking at their amazing new facility and they're like, oh, things are good now. They're going to turn around for us. You know, they're kind of happy-go-lucky all of a sudden. And in this part, like, honestly, this part of the movie felt more offensive than anything else. Mm-hmm. Because it feels like they are just teasing you and kind of slapping you in the face a little bit. Like, everything you just watched, how about this now? Because all of a sudden Johnny's like razzing on thing for the first time in the entire movie. Yeah. Almost the entire movie, they don't have dialogue with each other. They don't speak to each other, right?
In fairness to the movie, they only knew each other for about 2 minutes,
right?
You know? Which again is one of, like, I'd be totally fine with in a better movie.
But yes, in this scene, all of a sudden Johnny Storm's like, "Oh, it's the thing that nobody wanted," and we just spent this entire movie seeing how depressed and sad Thing was. Yeah. And for Johnny, who has not really interacted with him for the whole movie, to say something like that to him does not come off as
basically just
fun.
Just totally bullies him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right? You're a jerk, Johnny Storm.
Why don't you go cry about it?
Yeah, thanks. We just got over all this stuff, and the first thing you do is insult the poor guy. You know, and that they were trying to, you know, give us a little semblance of the personality between Thing and Johnny, because they have that very brother-like relationship where they tease each other all the time.
Which is...
They tried to give us that, but it totally failed here because of the whole movie that just preceded it.
Which is funny, because I liked that fine until I just heard your take on it, and I'm like, yep, you're right. That was awful, too.
Yeah, you know? That was bad.
Because I did the thing where I went... a little bit of Johnny and Thing, finally. Like, it's out of place, but it's fine. Like, it's, you know,
it just
a hint of what I wanted out of this movie. And then I look at it in the other light, and I go, oh, no.
Yeah, after
bad.
What the
that's
movie
not,
gave
bad.
Us, it was not a good point. And then they're kind of like, they're joking about being a team now, and they need a name for their team, and they throw out some really dumb names for their team. And Well, Ben's the one that says something about the facility being fantastic.
Yeah.
And then Reed's like, what'd you say? I said it was fantastic. And then they steal the Avengers ending.
Yep.
Completely rip off the Age of Ultron ending.
Which is,
he gets ready to call them the Fantastic Four, and they roll the credits.
Which is funny, too, what? Because they also end in their fun new facility in the middle of nowhere.
Uh-huh.
That whole ending was nothing but Avengers
ripped
rip-off.
They ripped off, you're right! Yeah. They just stole the Age of Ultron ending for this movie. Oh, jeez.
Yep.
Ah, it's so worst-tastic, it hurts my brain to talk about it. So. It's just not a good movie. It's
at,
bad.
Yeah, at the end of the day, poorly conceived, poorly put together. it's hard for me to say this. I think it was probably acted well, but poor characters being acted well is still not entertaining.
I do,
you know what
feel,
I mean?
I
think everybody on that movie did what they needed to do except for Dr. Doom. Well, not what they needed to do. Did what they were told to do.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad for some of the talent, honestly.
Yeah.
I really
do.
Like, because I do like Miles Teller, and I liked him in a lot of the other things I've seen.
Yeah.
And even though, like, when they initially...
Even though when they initially kind
of announced the casting, I was like, oh, they're a lot younger than I really want the Fantastic Four to be. Because I do kind of look at them as being... I mean, maybe with the exception of Johnny, who was always supposed to be kind of be the younger guy on the team.
Like the kid
I always kind of looked at them as more of an adult team, not a kid team.
Remember, I mean, Reed's got the... He's always got that gray.
He's always got gray hair.
Yeah, and they should be. You know, they're scientists. They're more well established, and they should be. And again, part of the idea of the movie being poorly conceived. You know, Fox has that thing where they're just like, "Well, we got."
I mean,
because
they were teenagers in this movie, right?
Yeah.
Like he plucked them out of
a high school
science fair. So they were teenagers.
Yeah. So it's like, well, we got to make everything millennial. We got to bring them back to being. But that's not. I mean, not every person who ever has to become a superhero has to be. You know,
exactly.
I mean, it works for some, it doesn't work for other. Like, I'm super excited that they're taking Spider-Man back to high school because he's got a
Spider-Man,
place there.
Exactly.
But,
Spider-Man
but the Fantastic
is a high schooler.
Doesn't have a place there.
Exactly.
They have to be more.
Except maybe Johnny. And because Johnny, I would almost even picture Johnny, maybe not quite as young, but I have always kind of pictured Johnny to be around Spider-Man's age. I mean, and Johnny and Peter.
Yeah.
Spider-Man and the Human Torch are kind of friends and buddies, and they have interactions anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, Johnny is Sue's younger brother, and that's... So I have always kind of put him in a younger role, but...
Well, never mind. I was going to say, in this movie, is she? But I think... is he? But I think he probably still is. He's probably still younger than
her. Yeah, probably. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just some of those things. It's like you said, it is. It's just poorly conceived. The whole movie, the concept of the movie, the reason that they made the movie, everything about it is just done for the wrong reasons.
Yep.
Just the wrong
and
reasons.
And that's a good segue to get into some of the stuff that's popped out afterwards, news-wise and stuff, because a couple of those articles we've read... And it's one of those where I've probably read four articles on it, and they've been 90% overlap. You know, it's the same stories coming out just from different people reporting on it. But they took actual, like, people on... They don't name a lot of their sources, but people actually involved somewhere in the crew or producers or somewhere along the creative team who put this movie together are even sitting there going, you know, this was a poorly conceived movie done for the wrong reasons. Every part of the decisions were done for the wrong reasons because they weren't trying to make a good, entertaining movie. They were trying to hold on to the rights.
Right.
And that's not how you do it, you know? And if you're going to do that, give yourself enough time to build the right movie. Basically, what is coming out now, to sum up, Fox picked Josh Trank for this movie because of the success he had on Chronicle, and they thought they had a... J.J. Abrams type, maybe up and coming. You know, somebody with a real specific vision, somebody who can really connect with some of the source material, and they wanted him to be one of their up-and-comers. And what they did is they took a guy who had made a $12 million movie in Chronicle and that had, I mean, really three, you know, pretty strong leads and not a lot of side characters anyway, and an interesting idea. And he made a good movie out of it, and it made, I don't even remember the results, but I think it cost 12, and it made 70, 100 million, something like that overall.
Yeah.
Very good return on investment. And they plucked that guy immediately from his $12 million, almost independent feeling movie, even though it was studio backed, and they dump him into a $130 million vehicle, and they just go, here you go.
Yeah, have at it.
You're totally untested. And that's where you kind of, I haven't heard many good stories about this kid from this,
yeah,
from the set here. And we'll get into some of that in a second, some of the other stuff's coming out. But you got to feel bad for him to a degree. Because he got thrown into a pool way over his head, and there was no lifeline for him.
Right.
And they basically said in a lot of these reports, even when Fox saw this trouble starting, they were so hell-bent on backing this kid and hoping that he was going to be this big thing that they just sort of ignored everything until it was far too late. Because by the time they finally figured out this is a disaster, they're halfway done filming this movie, they can't fire him and just hire somebody to come in and direct the second half of a movie.
Right.
They're just sort of stuck where they are trying to piece it together. But there was reports of this guy blocking himself out on set. He would just, they literally said he built a tent around his viewing booth and wouldn't talk to anybody.
That's so weird.
Cut him off from everything.
I mean, I guess, you know.
It's got to be a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't want to defend him too much because it sounds like he's at a lot of fault for a lot of this stuff. But at the same time, man, I really think they just sort of buried this kid way over his head. So he's blocking himself off from people on set. He's pushing real hard for this very droll movie, and that's why they were saying he was down to the point where he was telling actors when to blink, when to breathe, pull your performance back, flatten it all out. Like, he's pushing these characters to be
essentially. Like,
because I think he had this vision that was warped and weird, and everybody went, yeah, cool, do that, whatever. And no one to really hold his hand and tell him, here's how a giant studio movie is made, you know? Now, what's funny is, in a summer of the proportions that we've had here, you've got almost the exact same director story with Colin Trevorrow, I think is how you say his name, the guy who did Jurassic World, except with totally opposite results, because they plucked that guy out of obscure, very small market movies, dumped him into this tentpole franchise, and made more money than any other movie ever, save for two.
I was going to say,
third highest grossing film of all time.
And,
but some guys can handle the pressure in the spotlight, some guys can't.
Yeah.
And so that's where, I mean, that's the beginning and the end of where I feel bad for Josh Trank, but there's that hint of, well, maybe if he had been groomed a little bit better, he could have became what they wanted, but instead they threw him to the wolves and he got eaten.
Yeah.
You know? What were some of the other stuff?
Well, we can't forget that he tweeted.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's what he did.
And totally, like, just ran the movie down, you know, on his own and said, well, if Fox would have let me make the movie that I wanted to make, you know, it would have been much more fantastic.
Basically, he right before the movie opened, like Thursday, or maybe it was even Friday right after it opened, he sends out a tweet that says, a year ago I had a version of this movie that would have connected really well, and nobody will ever see it, and I guess that's just life sometimes.
Yeah.
And it was taken down very quickly, but, I mean, you know, guys know how Twitter works. It gets sent out, somebody captures it,
somebody
screen
captures it. Yeah.
So immediately him and Fox both lawyer up.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be suing the bejesus out of each other for a while now, I'm betting.
Yeah.
Because Fox is, they're estimating that tweet cost $10 million out of first weekend box office. Now, personally,
wow.
I think that's a total BS estimate.
Wow.
I don't think that's true at all, but that's the number I've seen they put on it. They're estimating $10 million
Well, and they're saying right now that this movie is going to end up costing Fox around $60 million.
Yep.
Like they're losing at least $60 million on this project.
Yep. Between production cost and marketing and distribution and the fact that nobody anywhere in the world is watching it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was...
And I'm honestly surprised if it'll only be 60.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it was already pronounced a box office flop because it didn't. What did it end up?
$27 million.
$27 million.
I think they said that was the lowest box office for a Marvel property since Elektra, I think.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not doing well. So, no. I mean, even the buzz about this movie has really got out. Plus, I mean, it just doesn't look good. Even those trailers,
yeah,
man. I mean, it just didn't look good.
You can't put your effects shots in the trailers because they all look like garbage.
Uh-huh.
You can't put your story in the trailers because you really don't have one.
Uh-huh.
You know, your characters aren't that likable. There's nothing to market.
Yeah, it's getting crazy.
They did. They said in one of the articles we read that Josh Trank, right before the movie opened, also sent an email to most of his main cast members or something that basically said, you know, I was really proud of what we did when we were doing it, and I really think we had a movie that was better. We would have had a movie that would have been better than 99% of all the other superhero movies that are out there.
Yes.
And I'm really sorry that didn't happen. And the article, I would give my arm to figure out who it was who said it. But the article said that one of the members, without specifying who, sent back, we probably didn't.
Yeah, 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 exactly, yep. Like, yeah. Well, I can't, like, okay, I understand being, like, you know, standing up for your own story or your own project and being proud of what you did.
Yeah.
But how can you make a claim, like, I guarantee my Fantastic Four movie would be better than 99% of the other superhero movies. When we've heard nothing but terrible, terrible, terrible things about this guy's vision long before Fox stepped in and did all their changes and rewrites.
And I tell you what, if you really wanted to take the time, and I don't want to sit through it anymore, but we've done some dissecting of this from this entire review here, saying here's what probably came from before and here's what probably came from after.
Yeah.
And you can definitely come in halfway through a production and butcher a movie.
Uh-huh.
You know what's a great example? Richard Donner's Superman 2.
Yes.
Which is, you can actually see the Donner cut. It's been available for...
Which is good. Know, I like
probably
it.
Probably 5-8 years now, mm-hmm. something like that. And then there was the old Richard Lester, I think his name was, cut, because we should do a podcast sometime on just the Superman movie history.
Yeah.
Because that's some really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Cliff noted here, Richard Donner was hired by the Salkinds, the producers, to make Superman the movie. Superman 1 and 2, what we know it today, was essentially one story at the time, and they decided to split it into two movies. That's why that weird ending for the first Superman movie comes, because they just had to throw an ending into the middle, sort of, you know?
Yeah.
Richard Donner was filming them both at the same time, so he filmed a lot of 2, but he did not get along with the producers at all. So the first one opened, they fired him, and they brought in another guy to basically finish the movie. It's kind of one of those things we talked about where you can't really do that nowadays. The guilds have changed, so the rules are different. B, that was a whole different kind of story, the way they were doing one movie and a second movie. You couldn't do that with the Fantastic Four because this was one movie.
Yes.
You know? But they brought in a guy to make Superman 2 who already had the story set in place for him, and a bunch of his footage had already been shot. And then he finished it off. So now and Superman 2 was always renowned as being pretty great. Just there were some really weird, goofy parts to it. And then you go and watch the Donner cut, and it just flows a lot more smoothly. And even it's not perfect, because he didn't film all of it himself, and some of the stuff he wanted to do, there's just not footage of. But some of the stuff that he wanted to do is in there. And a lot of the other stuff that they filmed, it wasn't necessarily him filming it, but it was still his movie, because the story was already set in place when it came in.
Right.
You know? But you can see the difference in just what the editing essentially can do, the different movie you can make out of it. Now, to say that, Donner filmed half of that movie, even when somebody came in and quote-unquote kind of wrecked it by making it less good, you could still tell it was a good movie. Compare that or contrast it with what we've got here. Trank is going, I had this great movie, that's what it would have been, except they came in and ruined it. No.
Yeah.
Because there's not a chunk of this movie that we just watched where we go, you know, that could have been great.
I don't believe you, Josh Trank.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it might have been less terrible, it might have been more terrible, it might have been exactly as terrible, but a little bit different, but no part of what we just watched, and he filmed and was the creative mind behind at least half, if not more of it, no part of that movie was salvageable, you know?
No.
It was not going to be good.
Right.
Again, it may not have been terrible, maybe, but it wasn't terrible is not what you're shooting for with your giant superhero blockbuster.
Yeah, exactly. Did you see any of the... it's amazing to see the things that people are putting articles up about concerning this movie. There was a whole article that went up that's been circling the net that's dedicated to the wig that Kate Mara had to wear in the movie. Because when they came in to do the reshoots, she had already apparently cut her hair real short.
For a different role.
So they had to fit her with a wig. to try to match up with what she was doing before. I didn't even really notice it because I probably wasn't just paying close enough attention to it. And now I kind of want to, except I don't think I'll ever watch this movie again. But there were several screenshots in this thing showing side by sides. And the whole article is talking about how just terrible this wig is and how noticeable it is.
No, I haven't noticed that at all. That's
there
hilarious.
Are apparently just scenes where like it just flips back and forth between her normal hair and the wig and the normal hair and the wig. And the wig is a completely different color blonde than her actual hair. And it just looks like a fake wig sitting on top of her head instead of actual hair.
And I will say there were a couple of times where I went where I felt like the color was off.
Yeah,
and I didn't pay close enough attention to notice, like you said, some of that stuff. But now that you say that, I was like, I did sort of see like the color shifting because it's one of those things that just catches you off guard. You're like, why in the world?
Yeah, the article title, I should have, and this is one of my things. I should have looked it up and told you guys where to find it. But even the title of the article is hilarious because it's like, it's like, let's take a moment to talk about that terrible wig that Kate Mara's wearing, and all these, and all the news about Worstastic Four, we should take a moment to kind of discuss this wig. I mean, it's hilarious. Just all the weird little things that are coming out about this movie are just amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. We got to go through your notes.
Let's do that. Cause I think we're pretty much done talking about it.
Yeah. That's our review.
Unmitigated disaster. Honestly, as I said, it could have been a worse movie. It's not the worst movie I've ever seen. It's just so unremarkable.
It's just so not good.
It's bad. It's definitely bad. But it's like you said, it's more just not good. Nothing happens.
Although
it looks ridiculous.
It will forever still be
Worstastic Four. For sure.
Hashtag Worstastic Four. Read through some of your notes.
Yeah, I'll kind of just go through. And this is just me sitting in the theater by myself with four other human beings. Scattered randomly about on a Wednesday night because nobody's going to see this movie. So I'm surprised more people than me had been in there. And this is just sort of my stream of consciousness as I'm watching this to make sure that I remember some of the stuff I want to talk about as we go through. So first off, the first thing I see when it comes up is Homer is Reed's teacher. I said on that. So I was like, hey, Homer. Homer's a jerk.
Yeah.
That kid, Reed as a kid, builds this matter transporter out of his 40 spare N64s.
Yeah,
he's
I know.
He's just got a rack of these things attached
Nintendo,
to it.
Nintendo 64!
Yeah, for whatever reason, in 2005, he's just got piles and piles of this 10-year-old gaming system that he is somehow powering his
I didn't even think about that. It is totally
teleporter.
Like a dated... Yeah. Gaming system at the time that he's doing that. It's not even like in the era of the 64.
You know, now, he's got all those. He's the son of an electrician. He doesn't have a Phillips head screwdriver.
Right.
They show the scene where he's trying to put the last piece in place and he's brought Ben Grimm to show him.
Yeah.
And he's got the wrong screwdriver for the part that he's trying to put together and Ben's like, here you go, and gives him the right one. I'm like, you can't build a matter transporter without a Phillips screwdriver, I'm pretty sure. I can't build a piece of furniture without one, so I'm pretty sure you can't build science without it, They did go with Victor Von Doom because all the early reports were that Dr. Doom was going to be Victor Domachev, a disgruntled computer hacker.
Yeah.
So apparently in the reshoots... Well,
he was going to be like
least,
a blogger, right?
Yeah, a blogger. That's what he was, a disgruntled blogger. So at least they fixed that
in
the reshoots.
Well, what about... Yeah, in the reshoots, because that first scene where he goes to get him, did you totally get the vibe that that's what he was?
For sure.
He had the long hair and the beard, and he was in the dark room, and he was sitting at his computer, and totally... That was the blogger character.
Which was my next note. Ugh, this guy's been on screen for 30 seconds, and he already sucks. Because, again, I thought most of the cast, I didn't like the characters they were playing, but I think they were fine. I did not like this guy at all.
Yeah.
If they work one more FF cliche into the fluid dialogue, I'm just going to urinate in this theater. They had hit the flying car thing. They had done the misplaced clobber in time. And this was right after she had called. I was like, we got a regular Dr. Doom here. I'm like, I'm going to shoot myself if they don't stop this, they made reference to Sue being born in Kosovo. I feel like I missed a joke.
Yeah, I don't know what that was, but maybe that's something, I don't know.
Maybe I just don't know where Kosovo is.
I don't.
That was just bizarre. This other dimension looks really fake.
Yeah.
That's when the CG really came into play. Yeah. Like, there wasn't a lot of need for computer graphics in the first half because it was all build. As soon as the special effects started coming in, it really got disastrous.
Yeah.
Thank God they explain why each of the four got their powers. Because they did that thing, like I said, where
the door opens
for no reason and rocks are pouring in. And, Johnny just exploded while teleporting, so I guess he's on fire, you know?
Yeah.
And, Sue got her powers of invisibility because she's the one they forgot to invite. Which I think makes perfect
sense.
That's
the best explanation for her to get...
Yeah, because everybody had their explanation. It's like, why is she invisible? Because nobody thought to bring her.
Because, we didn't think about her.
Yeah.
Overlooked.
Yeah. This is where I got to the part, like I said earlier. This is an actual note. Despite itself, I liked the first 45 minutes. I got a strong feeling that's about to go away.
Yeah.
And it did. The fire effect is cool. That's the one thing I did like. I thought Johnny looked okay when he was on fire for the most part. This is right where they're in that whole thing where everybody is sad and hurting and 10 minutes of just depression. And I go, why in the world did anyone think a sad Fantastic Four movie was a worthwhile idea?
Yeah.
I'll never get it. Thing is so cartoony because
he wasn't wearing pants.
No, not at all.
No pants.
And I think the old Thing looked a lot better. And it looked styrofoamy.
Yeah.
You know? But the 05 and 07 thing with a suit, I thought looked a lot better than this thing that was clearly poorly drawn, you know?
That's one of the other things I was talking about with Christina, too. I was like, look at how Marvel does Hulk.
Yep.
Why can't Thing done that good?
Yeah. Why not?
Why?
Because nobody's taking the time.
Yeah.
And that's what Thing is really cartoony. Was one of my notes. The next note is, a lot of these effects are hokey, because that's when I'm starting to dawn on me that every time they do special effects, it looks terrible.
Sue floating around in her bubble all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
This machine here, they don't retest the new shuttle. Regis says it's good to go,
so
they just go.
Yep.
Like we said, he comes in and goes, oh, he's programmed wrong. No, it's fine. And they just start sending troops through.
Send them through.
You know? Ha ha, Doom looks terrible. I laughed out loud in that theater.
Did you laugh
when they showed him?
Like when the raptor got shot with a bazooka?
No, because it wasn't like a belly laugh. It wasn't worth, 30 seconds of full laughter.
Yeah.
It was just a ha! Oh, ridiculous.
That's him.
Yep. Then we get to the part where he starts just pulling things on top of people. I'm like, so Doom is Magneto. And then he just starts blowing people up like, weirder than Magneto. Is his power that he can look at random things and make something unpredictably terrible happen to them? Because
that is his power.
He final destination.
That has to be his power.
Yep. Reed's too deadpan.
Yep.
Most of them need a force field, but being on fire is protection enough for Johnny. He can just fly through interdimensional portals just by being on fire. This movie is dumb. That's a note there. This is my favorite part.
I like how you just stuck that note in the middle. This movie is dumb.
I don't even remember what happened when I wrote that, but I was like, I'm losing it. They get that hokey line that I talked about, part of my soul dying, when Reed, one of them says, he's stronger than any of us, and Reed goes, but he's not stronger than all of us, and here's my note, but he's not stronger than all of us. Yeah, he is. Dude looks at the ground and black hole science gets built out of rocks. Your arms are stretchy. You're doomed. there was just no better, like he's looking at people and their worlds are exploding.
Yeah.
And this guy goes, but if we work together, we'll beat him. And that's the worst part is it didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
They gave him way too much power and then he just evaporated. It was bad. So the army just gives them a giant, fully staffed research facility with no repercussions. Real part of the movie. That's the epilogue.
Yep.
We want you to help us do stuff. No, you're just going to give us science.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Ben's happy now. Andy names the team. Hooray, apparently. This movie is farts.
Yeah, this movie is farts.
That's my last
That was the email I got from you, too. Right? This movie is farts. That movie was farts.
Almost tweeted that.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right, this, I think, right here will be the last thing we really talk about with Worstastic 4. But this is a message that we got from one of our listeners. Jack Starrow is the same guy who asked us the awesome Marvel Cinematic Universe question last week, which is why I'm going to go ahead and read this, because that sparked so much cool discussion.
Yeah.
I thought this would be kind of fun to read. He says, hey guys, I don't know if you wanted listener feedback on Worstastic 4, but on the off chance that you do, here are a few quick thoughts. He goes on to say, I don't actually hate the film entirely. I kind of sum it up by saying that the first half was actually a good movie. It was just a terrible Fantastic Four movie. But the second half wasn't a good anything. And there you go. That's exactly what we were talking about earlier. Then he says, it kind of felt like it came from an alternate history in which Raimi's Spider-Man in the later MCU never happened.
Oh, wow.
And instead, the Bryan Singer X-Men films and the Nolan Batman flicks had spawned a whole genre of quote-unquote realistic movies that were bleak, colorless, and ashamed of admitting that they were based on a crazy comic book concept, where no one ever gets a costume or uses their superhero names. Mm-hmm. That is a really interesting thought.
Brilliant observation.
Yes, yes, absolutely. He goes on to say, I'm really curious to know what was in the original version that Josh Trank wanted to make and how much was actually reshot, because there's obviously a lot of speculation and rumors that Fox screwed him over on this, which is what we were all just talking about. He says, or possibly that he screwed himself creatively and they had to pick up the pieces. I feel like everything up until the point where they have the 1 year later time lapse was actually solid, if drab, science fiction. But it was really after that point when it went down the toilet.
Yeah, man, this is exactly what...
This is pretty much exactly how we feel. Okay, so final bullet points. Hollywood just can't get Dr. Doom right. That is the same thing I said. They're obsessed with tying his origin into the Fantastic Four.
Is this the first time you're reading this?
Yes, this is the first time I'm reading this.
Because me too, and he's just saying exactly what you were saying the whole time.
That's hilarious. Yeah, well, I saw the message and I was like, I'll save that for the show. And here we go. Yeah, so he says, they're obsessed with tying his origin into the Fantastic Fours because they're obsessed with the idea that he has to have superpowers to be a credible threat.
Yep. Wow.
But yeah, I mean, and that's the exact same conversation I had with Christina at the movie theater. I mean, I don't get that. He says, they're missing the point. Doom's ability to have fisticuffs with you isn't what makes him threatening. It's his genius and ego that make him scary. This is easily his worst screen incarnation, with the typical Marvel movie problem of having bland villains with no comprehensible motivations.
Yeah. Jack, if we ever can't do the show for a while, we might just bring you
Right? Yeah. No kidding. Sue not going on the trip to the negative zone is just stupid beyond belief. I can't believe they sidelined her character like that. Maybe he went into the future and listened to our podcast.
Yeah, maybe.
And then sent us this email.
This is spooky.
Yeah. One of the biggest problems in the second half of the movie is that they haven't established the relationship between the four characters properly. Ben and Johnny have practically no lines with each other at all, so when they try to do the callback to their famous friendly antagonism from the comics at the very end, instead of sounding like good-natured teasing, he comes off like a total jerk towards someone who spent half the movie enduring serious psychological pain. This is ridiculous.
You've read this before.
I have not read this all the way through. I swear I'm not like, this is crazy.
Yeah. This is...
P.S. I really hope
Are you Jack Starro?
No, it's not me.
This is... Wow.
I'm
literally flabbergasted.
He's just on the same wavelength as us, I guess. P.S. I really hope you cover the Corman Fantastic Four. I really want to hear you guys talk about that. We do also want to watch the Corman Fantastic Four. Honestly, I feel like that's just proof that we're not alone in thinking all
that
stuff. I feel like that's just... I mean, if you've read anything on the internet, you've seen a lot of people saying a lot of the exact same kind of things. So we're all feeling the same way about this movie. And that was just... I mean, he's just right there on the same wavelength as us. I think, you know, he agrees with us on a lot of the things we bring up with anyway, so he's just one of those guys that...
Really interesting observation on the whole, and really...
That was
like...
what I think was the best. That's something I didn't even think about at all. His observation about the...
Yeah.
This movie feeling like it was made with the MCU just not existing,
and like I was saying earlier, it's the whole old Hollywood mentality.
Yeah. They're
still running under the same principles that they were trying to run into,
right,
you know, 15 years ago when some of this stuff didn't work.
Right.
You know, but now it does. So expand your horizons a little bit. And I've always said that that's one of my big problems with Man of Steel. It was one of my big problems with this movie as they were making it. They're trying to make all these Batman movies with other superheroes in them. Like, Batman works for a very specific reason, but I don't want a Batman movie with Superman in it, and they gave it to me anyway.
Yeah.
And I don't want a Batman movie with a Fantastic Four in it, but they tried to give it to me anyway. You know, but that's what it is. It's this bleak, it's this real world, it's this downtrodden. All the heroes are sad for whatever reason, and there's just no joy.
Well, that's that,
out of it. And it, again, it works great for Batman, and it makes really good Batman movies, but that's not what most of these characters are.
Exactly.
And just because one Batman movie made gobs and gobs of money doesn't mean you have to keep trying to recreate that with every property you own.
Exactly. And that has been a very common theme on this show that we've talked about. Just that whole realistic comic book movie is not something I need.
Yeah.
It works for some characters, like Batman specifically. It's good for him. But when you got guys like... I think it
worked pretty well in the early X-Men movies, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. For
even they weren't joyless.
Right.
You know, even they were... They had that sort of niche to them, but they still were fun movies.
You know? Right. All right, well, let's go ahead and get into some of our fan questions. That I think that pretty much wraps up our Worst-tastic Four discussion. So. There, good thoughts from some of our listeners, and I mean, just really. I was gonna say, like, last week we said, don't spend your money on this movie because we don't want to give Fox the wrong impression with it, and I think they've kind of. I hope they've got the idea at this point that this is a failure and they did it wrong and they really messed up. But like, seriously, I still kind of feel the same way. Don't really go out of your way to see this movie. If you're very curious about it and you want to know, I would consider waiting for this to hit Redbox or Netflix or, you know, the HBO movie, you know, something like whatever, that. Yeah. And then give it a watch when you're at home and you can just kind of check it out at your leisure. Don't go to the theater and watch this. It's just not worth it. You know,
You know the feeling sometimes where you go, well, even if I don't know if it's going to be that great, it's one of those things you just sort of have to see in theaters. It really isn't that even.
No, it's
because
not.
Because like a lot of these movies, you're like, well, it's a bad movie, but at least it looked cool. Yeah. It doesn't. It's terrible looking, and you don't need to see it. It'll probably look better on your TV at home because it won't be as big and in your face, all the imperfections, you know?
Right.
So... And to answer, like I said, Jack Starrow's the beginning of his question there. I don't know if you guys want feedback, you know, fan feedback about the movie. Always,
yeah.
All these opinions, we have stuff. We love to hear what you guys think about them too, whether they agree or disagree or what your point of view is or whatever. I mean, as long as you don't just start coming on and cussing us. If you do that, we'll probably stop reading, you know, at the beginning of the post there.
Yeah.
But we want to know what you guys think about this stuff, too. So always feel free, even if you don't have a question, just let us know what you thought about some of the stuff we're watching.
Awesome. All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap things up with a couple of listener questions here. The first question comes from Sergio, who writes in, I totally understand you both like to watch comic book movies because they are directly related to the toy community, your passion for action figures, and the main idea behind this podcast. But don't you ever get sick of them? I mean, do you enjoy some real cinema from time to time? And by real, I mean films like Foxcatcher, Whiplash, Nightcrawler, Her Nebraska. He lists a whole bunch of movies here. He says it would be interesting to have your point of view on some of those types of films. I mean, superhero movies aren't the only movies that we watch.
Yeah, it kind of, we focus a lot of the podcast on it, like you said, because that's sort of, it's the geeky.
It's, yeah, exactly. And I think that's just the simplest way to answer that. This podcast here is built around celebrating the geek culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, we talk about the geek movies, the geek toys, comic books, TV shows, that kind of stuff. So that's the reason why. Honestly, we probably won't get into that kind of stuff on this show.
Now, I've seen most of the movies on that list there.
Yeah, especially, I was going to say, especially John, you are a movie guy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what John does. Yeah. He loves movies.
Yeah.
And we do from time to time, I mean, we have episodes dedicated to the Oscars. Mm-hmm. We always do that every year.
I was going
to
bring that up because a lot of those were Oscar contenders and stuff like that too. And I know, and I don't know how long you've been listening to the show, Sergio, but around February when Oscar time comes around, AMC Theaters, which is the local chain we have here in town, they always do Best Picture Showcase is what they call it, which I'm sure you know what it is based on kind of some of the stuff you're talking about. I'm sure you're privy to the same types of events if you've got an AMC near you anyway. But they play anything that's nominated for Best Picture, they play over a couple of Saturdays. You know, so I always go to those. One of my favorite times of year is when Oscar time rolls around. Now, I will dog the award ceremony itself because, like most award ceremonies, it's basically just a weird popularity contest. It doesn't actually have anything to do with what the best movies are. Half the time, some of the better ones aren't even on the list. You know?
Right.
But it's just the season of celebrating movies, and I love it. And we always do at least a small, you know, at least a portion of an episode about that when it comes around. And hopefully, I always think, you know, we'll need to dedicate a little bit more time because that's one of the episodes that I can really take over and go to town on some of that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
The other problem is when that season always runs around, it's always, It's Super Bowl, Oscars, WrestleMania, and is it Toy Fair? It's
Toy Fair.
Yeah, Toy Fair. Yeah. So we usually do a WrestleMania episode where we bring one of our wrestling buddies in and we talk about that card because that's, at least for us, that's part of our geek culture.
Yep.
You've always got to devote all, if not most, if not all of an episode to Toy Fair.
And usually so, Comic-Con, too, gets kind of a big
discussion. Yeah, it's when some of the news starts coming out, stuff like that. But right around that time of the year, I always go, oh, I'm going to do an episode about the Oscars. And then I look around and go, man, we've got 1,000 things to talk about.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do part of the episode about the Oscars.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're going to go. But it's definitely stuff we enjoy. I just don't know how much we're going to get into. We're not going to talk about Inside Llewyn Davis on this show very often because it doesn't really fit with the theme. However, if there's enough request for any particular movie, if people want, you know, if something comes out that's big and you haven't heard us talk about it, we always say, let us know what you want us to talk about. We'll go see it just so we can talk about it.
Yeah.
And if there's more, you know, people out there who really want to have these kind of discussions, you can always hit me up because I'm the one who sees more of this stuff.
Yeah,
you can,
for sure.
You can tweet me. You can get me on the Facebook page here. There's lots of ways to get in contact with us. And if it's something that becomes a demand, we can always take the time to do it. It's just one of those things that, yes, we definitely enjoy those types of movies, me specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Or especially, I should say. We don't get to them on the show a lot. But like I said, that I'm going down that list. I think there's about 3 of them that I haven't seen. 2 of them that I haven't seen. So, yeah. And most of the ones, wasn't a big fan of Her, wasn't a big fan of Beasts of the Southern Wild. I think most of the other ones I liked pretty well, even.
Cool.
So.
And to answer the question you asked at the beginning, I don't get sick of superhero movies unless they're worst-tastic.
Yeah, exactly. I don't see any movies that are good, and I get real sick of movies that are terrible, real bad. They talked about that. I've heard a lot of people saying after Worst-Tastic 4 came out and totally bombed, and that's on the heels of Ant-Man making less money than a lot of Marvel movies.
Mm-hmm.
Not by much, but a little bit less.
Mm-hmm.
Which is coming off the heels of the Avengers making a little bit less than the first Avengers, but still more than almost every other movie ever.
Yeah.
You know? And so there's that. I think they teach it in journalism school now. Be negative. Be negative.
Yeah, right.
Predict the end. Predict the end. Because everybody's going, do you guys get a sense that audiences are fatigued on superheroes?
No.
No.
Not even kind of.
A movie about Ant-Man has made like $300 million worldwide in a few
weeks. That is not superhero movie fatigue.
Yeah, exactly.
That is incredible.
I mean, the fact that it didn't make the $600 to $700 million that like the last Spider-Man movie made worldwide, or hasn't made it yet and probably won't make it, that's fine. But the fact that it's not making as much as some other movies, it's not as big as some other movies.
Yeah.
It's a no-name character. People don't realize it even exists.
Exactly.
You know, it's not tied into the other parts of the cinematic universe as tightly as anything. I will say Marvel has their tentpoles and their smaller movies.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, I think, the second planned sort. It's sort of a buffer. We did this big Captain America movie, and then this smaller, weird space movie nobody's ever heard of. And then this huge Avengers movie. And then this smaller Ant-Man movie that nobody really cares about. I think that was the plan a few years ago when it came out. And even one of the smaller movies made more money.
Yes.
You know, Guardians was not supposed to be that huge of a hit.
Yeah.
And that was just a year ago this month that that came out.
That's crazy.
I don't think there's fatigue.
I don't think so either.
I think it follows the flow of how big and how good the movies are. So,
well, Sergio has one more question here that he wanted to ask. He says it's related to his first one. Why pay to go watch a film knowing it's going to suck big time before even watching it? I constantly hear people say, I hope Fantastic Four is going to flop. But these are the same people that will pay to go to watch it. If you're really pissed against a film and you want it to flop so that the studio can learn from their experience and their mistakes, well, don't go watch it. At the end of the day, one admission is still one admission. I've got nothing against comic book films, but it really kills me when people complain about a title but then still go to watch it. Then he says, go watch films like Take Shelter instead. I really wish people were less lazy when picking a film. Anyway, sorry for my little rant, and thanks for your attention, guys. Keep it up. And you are very fair on that point. And again, we said the same thing on the last episode, and we said it again here. You're right. If a movie does look bad and you don't want to give the studio money because you're that angry about it, I agree. Don't bother going to see it.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Because he's right. I mean, sometimes you'll make that mistake of going, well, this movie looks so bad, I'm going to go watch it, but I hope it fails. But then everybody has that thought, and they all go to see it, and it makes money. And the studio goes, oh, look at all the money we made this weekend. And then that's the opposite effect that you wanted. So, I mean, you know, that can happen.
Yeah.
That did not happen with Worstastic
nope,
4.
Nope, it fell right off. And I think that's part of, it's a little bit part of the geek culture.
Yeah.
And it's something I complain about myself, almost exactly that. You know, like, stop complaining about everything so much. If you don't like it, just don't go watch it. Now, I'll step all over my toes on that, because we complain about a lot of stuff we don't watch on that. But we're kind of reporting on it.
I was going to say, we can always use the podcast as an excuse. Yeah. You know, we have to see so we can tell you guys about it.
I promise you, I only went to see this movie in theaters because I had to come on and talk about it. And even, we had planned on going together, and that didn't work out. And even after that happened, I was texting Dan going, do I really need
it? Yeah,
he
was like, do I need to go see it?
And
I was like, have to, because I need to talk about this with you.
Yeah,
please go see it. Yeah.
But I fully agree with you. You know, stop complaining so much about what terrible things these movies are doing to your psyche.
Yeah.
And just stop watching.
I am going to take this and I'm going to turn it around and I'm going to throw it right back into things like the toy community, toy collecting. The exact same principle applies. And this is something else I've tried to say over and over and over again online, and it falls on deaf ears a lot. You always see the same kind of thing with people complaining about the way this figure looks or the way that toy looks, and the toy company's not making it right, or they're not doing what I want them to do. Vote with your dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Don't continue to buy the toys that you're mad about. Just don't buy them. That's the only way that they will get the picture. So same thing with the movies, can be applied to toys, can be applied to anything else that is a consumer product.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to show the company that's producing it that they're doing something wrong, don't give them your money. It's the only way that they'll ever learn anything. Getting on the internet complaining about it is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
You got to vote with your dollars.
Now, I will say, too, the one little reprieve I will give to that is sometimes, just as a movie fan, sometimes you just want to know what something's like, even
if
you don't have a good feeling about it, because you can be surprised. You know, you for sure can be surprised. Something can come out with bad buzz and a bad-looking trailer and turn out to be a really fun movie. And a lot of people, I think, pull their satisfaction by being able to complain about some of this stuff. And I don't want to take that away from anybody. I just don't want you to take it too far, you know? But some of this stuff, you go, well, I don't think I'm going to like this movie, but everybody's going to be talking about it, and I want to be able to back up my claim. So there are instances like that. But in general, vote with your dollars.
If you think
something's going to be terrible, then don't go see it and talk about it and make everybody else curious so that they go see it too.
Right. Awesome. Well, thank you, Sergio, very much. Those were very
good
questions. Really good. All right. Next question here comes from Chris, who says, hey, Dan and Jonathan, first I want to say how much I really enjoy the podcast.
Thanks.
It always seems that you guys say what I'm thinking with regards to many topics you discuss around geek culture. Must be being born in the 80s. There you go. That must be it.
79.
Oh, no. That's not it then. It's out the window.
For 3 days, though.
I wanted to ask for your thoughts on something that came to my mind recently. With the children of the 80s having been in a position over the last several years to make the films and the toys that we as kids always wanted, how long before we see more of a 90s revival? What properties do you foresee making it to the big screen, and which do you hope we never see? I was never a fan of the Japanese anime shows like Pokemon and Dragon Ball Z, but I know that they were very popular with kids back in the 90s. In my opinion, they lack a broader appeal, and I can't imagine anyone being interested outside of the hardcore fan bases. What do you guys think? Did the 90s kids shows have enough depth to them to translate for a more mature audience? What do you expect to see for the 2000s generation and beyond? iPod the movie? Keep up the great work, and take care, you guys. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is a very, very good topic, and I kind of feel like we are already on the back end of the 80s nostalgia kick. I really feel like it's just a matter of time before we are more in the 90s nostalgia stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because I already feel like it's kind of hitting that transition period right now. Because it's weird to think about it, but the teenagers and the people that are already hitting their 20s and their early 20s are the ones that grew up in the late 90s all the way up to the early 2000s now, mm-hmm. which is crazy. I mean, think about it. It's 2015. Everybody that was born in 2000 is 15 years old right now. Mm-hmm. That's
nuts.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah.
You know,
in your mid-30s
so,
it is anyway.
Right,
when you're 15.
Yeah. I know, when you're 15, whatever. But yeah, we're in our 30s, and it's crazy to think about that because, you know, the kids that grew up playing with the Nintendo 64 and the PlayStation as their first video game console are adults now.
Yep.
And that's weird considering we grew up with Atari and Nintendo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's just, that's one of those things that really kind of puts things in perspective of how much things change in a 10-year period. So I kind of feel like we are already on that backswing of 80s nostalgia. I don't think it's going to stick around too terribly much longer, but I think it always will linger a little bit because just because the 90s kids are turning into adults doesn't mean that our generation is suddenly going to stop making mm-hmm. this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to stop wanting it.
Yeah.
But there is going to be an increase in demand for the stuff they're nostalgic about. Mm-hmm. So that's going to start just kind of piling into all of this, I think.
I think it's a really interesting kind of point of view on it, and one I'd honestly like to kind of study more and maybe delve deeper into, because there's always overlap with that stuff, too. Like, I mean, for instance, there's already been a Dragon Ball Z movie.
Yes.
You know, live act. No, it was terrible. I don't think anybody saw it.
I think it failed.
Yeah,
I think it flopped
miserably.
Hard. Yeah.
But, I mean, but it was out there. And it was out there 5-6 years ago, probably, at least. It was a while back now.
Yep.
I think they're working on Power Rangers.
They
right
are
now.
Working on Power Rangers
you
right
know?
Now.
Yeah.
And we've brought that up before. Power Rangers is a huge 90s nostalgia thing. And Power Rangers has never really gone away. It's one of those things that has managed to stay constant through all the years. But
sort of like the Ninja Turtles,
sort of like Transformers. But specifically, the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers is the team that all the 90s kids are very nostalgic for. And that happens to be what the new movie is going to be. A brand new Mighty Morphin Power Rangers movie. So I think that right there is a perfect example of it is already happening.
Yeah.
It is starting to happen right now.
Well, and the other problem, but like I said, there was that overlap because it was always, I mean, they've been doing stuff like that for a while. It's just a matter of how big and how much effort they put into it.
Yes, yes.
And I think it's less when will they start doing this stuff and more when will the quality catch up. Because
that's true.
We've made really good quality, high quality stuff. We've dumped a lot of money into some 80s nostalgia stuff.
Yeah.
Even the stuff that's not that great. I mean, a lot of people complain about the Transformers movies. For the most part, I like them fine. But they are what they're... You know, there's a lot of resources put into them. Those G.I. Joe movies, you know, nobody was a huge fan of, but they cost a lot of money. They made a lot of money. You know, there's big resources into them. We've got a Dragon Ball Z movie, but it didn't cost anything. Nobody was in it. Nobody saw it, whatever. When are they going to make one of those that is really got some effort behind it, you know? And I think they're putting some effort into this Power Rangers one here.
Yeah.
Now we've still got a lot of holdovers from the 80s that we haven't seen stuff yet. We haven't seen like a big budget He-Man yet. We haven't seen a big budget Thundercats yet. So there's plenty of,
there's still stuff.
Where are the Silverhawks?
Oh my gosh. I don't even know what I'll do if I get a Silverhawks movie for a He-Man movie. I would be upset.
But the point is there's still such a pool to pull from.
Yeah, there is.
But I think we are kind of making that shift where there's a lot. Now the other problem I run into is the when you got into the 90s, we were getting into high school. I was losing track of a lot of this stuff. I mean, I still kept up with the stuff I liked, but, like, I never got into Power Rangers. I didn't know what Dragon Ball Z was for a long time. There are properties that were huge in the 90s that I know zero about.
Yeah.
You know? Is that when SpongeBob came in? Was that in the 90s or was
that
later?
That was...
They just did a really weirdly placed big-budget movie for him.
I don't know
what the budget was.
But yeah, I think that would have been very late 90s that SpongeBob showed up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The other thing is, some of the stuff that we had, you know, coming in from the 90s, like, I know, like, South Park and Family Guy both hit in the late 90s and were huge and new and whatever, and those things are both still actively running properties.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of a weird mix. My thought there would be, at what point did video games start becoming so much more cinematic? And that would have been around the Resident Evil period, stuff like
PlayStation.
That. Later 90s, some of the early Metal Gears and stuff like that, when it really started to feel like you were playing a movie anyway.
Right.
So I'm wondering, as we make that transition through the decade, are we going to finally start seeing real high-quality video game movies?
That could be.
Because, how long did we go where we didn't have really good superhero movies, really good comic book movies?
Right.
And everybody said, well, it's hard to do. It can't really be done. We don't have the technology for it. We don't have the source material, like the way to shift it into the the cinema form. It's probably just never going to be done. And then now, lo and behold, we're in a golden age of where all of that stuff is just transitioning perfectly. Video games have been another one of those. I mean, you've got your first Mortal Kombat, which was pretty good, and the Resident Evil movies that exist now, which are very loosely tied into, you know, how the games were.
Right, right,
but they're
right,
at least, I mean, they're at least fun watches. But then you've got a lot of video game movies that people have attempted to make that are just god-awful.
Yeah.
So when are we going to start putting our resources into going, all right, how do we tell this story to a real audience with real visuals? And and I'm spitballing this here as I'm reading your question, but that was the first thing that popped into my mind is less when are we going to start seeing 90s cartoons and more when are we going to make that trend, that transition from the like comic book medium to the video game medium?
Because
I think that's one of the things that was happening as that decade
transition.
It is.
That's a big point about, that's one thing that really kind of makes the 90s kids different than the 80s kids. Now, video games really started getting their prominence in the 80s. Yeah. That's when they, I mean, 85 when the Nintendo hit, and the latter half of the decade, that's when video games really hit this huge stride. I mean, there was arcades and stuff in the early 80s, but, you know, the Nintendo got that full upswing.
Yeah.
And that's, we had video games as kids too, but it wasn't so like ingrained in our childhood, and they weren't that complete as they were for the 90s kids. It was a totally different thing. I even think back to, because those kids they grew up playing those video games much more than they were playing with action figures and watching cartoons.
Or watching
probably
cartoons, yeah.
They were more into these video games. And that's the same with kids now. I mean, kids now are far more into their iPads and their smartphones and their YouTube stuff than they are toys and anything else. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it is getting a lot more technology-based as every generation goes on. I think you're right. I think you're onto something with the video game thing. I think that is going to have a huge nostalgic impact on that generation, and it'll be interesting to see if that plays into the stuff that we really start seeing get ramped up in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy.
It's a really cool thing to think about.
It is a very, very cool thing to think about.
Yeah, we get, you know, we're getting more and more questions coming through, which is awesome. But again, I am continuously caught off guard by just the nature of some of these things that come through. Not to say I'm surprised that you guys are asking good questions, but I don't expect to think as much as I do every time I see one of those come through, and it's great.
So I'm
keep
so
those
glad.
Coming, guys.
Yeah,
we really appreciate it.
I'm glad that we can kind of provoke that kind of a thought process with the listeners, and that we can have actual discussions based on it. I think that is very exciting, and I'm glad that we're kind of like appealing to that demographic.
For sure.
I really like that.
That's
a lot.
That's what the show's here for. To
absolutely.
Be able to discuss this stuff.
Absolutely. So definitely keep the questions coming, guys. We want to thank everybody who sent questions and topics to us this week again. If you guys want to do
Jack Starro, get out of Dan's brain.
Get out of my brain, Jack Starro. Yeah, that was weird. That was like all I read on his post was that he had some thoughts that he wanted to share, and I kind of read that line about the X-Men movie universes and everything being prominent, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna save this for the show because that's a really good thought. And then it was just like exactly the same things we talked about. That was weird, but it was good. I'm glad.
Good.
I think it just kind of like I said, I think that helps reinforce what everybody's thinking about this movie, and it shows that we're not just
it's not just us.
This movie has some serious flaws that everybody's thinking of.
We don't have to change the name of the show to Butthurt Nerds yet.
That's right. That's right. We try really hard not to be those guys. So if you guys have questions, topic suggestions, you want to write in with some of your thoughts, even if your thoughts don't agree with ours, as long as, you know, you're portraying it in a discussion-like manner, we would love to hear that. I think that would be awesome. We can bring that up here on the show. Best way to do it is to head over to our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/geekeasypodcast. I do always put up a reminder post on there when we're about to record to let you guys know we're looking for questions, but feel free to just post them there on the wall, send a message to the page, however you want to get them to us, and we will read them here on the show the next time we sit down together. Guys, to stay up to date on the podcast, there's several different ways you can listen to us. We are available on iTunes, so be sure to subscribe there, and please give us a rating. We would love a rating. We would love a review on iTunes. The more of those that we get, the higher in the rankings we get on iTunes. Once we get so many reviews, we actually get a rank. And once we start hitting the ranking boards, more people will find us. Mm-hmm. So please, if you have an iTunes account, go rate us on iTunes. I would love that. For all you Android users, we're on Stitcher, so you can find us and follow us on Stitcher. We're also on Podbean, so if you use the Podbean app, you can find us there, or you can head over to geekeasypodcast.com, and you can just follow the RSS feed. So lots of different ways that you can track us down. And then, of course, I have been putting segments from each of the shows up on YouTube for the YouTube audience. So if you want to watch the videos, you can head over to YouTube, search for Pixel Dan, find my channel, hit the subscribe button, and you'll get a little dose of Geek Easy right there as well. Any final thoughts? Anything else you want to say before we wrap things up today?
Honestly, no. Like I said, I really appreciate the questions. It's nice. I'm actually still sitting here in my mind working through some of those.
That's awesome. And, you know, that's awesome.
So it's really got my brain going, and that's what I love to do, is just be able to connect with the you know, other people who love the culture and really kind of get these thoughts flowing. So thank you guys very much for interacting, and keep that up.
That's awesome. Well, there you go, guys. So until the next time we get together, I am Pixel Dan.
I'm Jonathan Leonard.
Take care, my friends.
The Geek Easy Podcast is a production of PixelDan.com. Musical tracks used in the intro and outro are used with full permission of the respective owners or creators. Intro and outro narrations are provided by me, Brian T. Stevenson. Any animated series discussed are copyright their respective owners. PixelDan.com's The Geek Easy Podcast is provided for entertainment purposes only. The views expressed are those solely of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily represent those of PixelDan.com or any other party. Be sure to join us next time for another installment of the Geek Easy Podcast.